Thank you, Pete. Friends, can you imagine being the guest of honor in your own skin? I remember a time in my life that was the exact opposite, being so uncomfortable in my skin that I couldn't interact with people from my best self. This happens to a lot of us during our puberty years. It creates one of the ways middle schoolers can be so mean to each other. At that age, not only are we so uncomfortable with ourselves, we don't know how to move through the world, but we also haven't yet fully developed the muscles of self-awareness and kindness. So we might also project our own feelings of unworthiness onto others. And so we might respond to our own feeling of lack of self-worth by forming or finding groups that help us feel worthy. And in so doing, we separate ourselves from other groups of people. These feelings and processes don't necessarily end as we develop beyond puberty. Seeking spaces of like-mindedness is a way of seeking comfort in a hard world. This behavior is also actively fed by our society. There's this strategy that's been developed and used by groups of people in our nation's history who have created ways to hold power and want to keep it that way. It's called divide and conquer, in which they feed lies to different groups of people, lies that when we believe them, keep us from joining together to overcome marginalization and oppression. They want you thinking you're bad at being a girl, instead of thinking you're great at being yourself. If poor white people, for example, believe they're better than poor black people or poor immigrants, we won't ever develop the momentum we need to defeat racism and poverty. When we find ourselves unable to find common ground or even to see the humanity of people who aren't like us, that's a big part of what's at work in this strategy. Andrea Gibson talks about what they want you to believe about yourself. If we believe ourselves to be bad at being who we are supposed to be, then we're so much more easily isolated from other people. We're also more likely to do or buy things that maybe aren't in our best interest, or in the best interest of our neighbors, or the Earth home that we all share. If we spend our time and our resources trying to fit, to conform, we won't develop much awareness of how doing and buying these things hurt us, while sustaining and increasing wealth and power for those who already have it. And we won't have the energy to resist when those who have it continue to manipulate those who don't for their own gains. Andrea Gibson also talks about blending in with that powerful metaphor about the blender and the blade. We don't just hurt each other when we exclude others in our conscious or unconscious compliance with divide and conquer. The act of hurting each other as we try to fit in also creates wounds in our own hearts and souls. The African-American writer Cole Arthur Riley writes about this in her book about discovering the sacred in our own skins called This Here Flesh, Spirituality, Liberation, and the Stories That Make Us. She writes, "Exclusion operates by the same rule of mutuality as welcome, for it harms both the excluded and the excluder. If you are the hands of exclusion long enough, you learn acceptance only at the hands of someone else's exile. You learn belonging as competition, not restoration. It is also a kind of restlessness, for the energy you expend forbidding others to walk through the door of community is only matched by the energy you expend competing to stay inside yourself." This is not just isolating, it's exhausting. And it's hard to be, right? Because we don't know that we are the guest of honor in our own skin. We know that we're imperfect and we make mistakes and we cause harm, and sometimes we mix that up with thinking that we are unworthy of care. When we believe that we're unworthy, we don't have the resources to create spaces in which others believe they're worthy. It is hard to resist the divide and conquer strategy that tells us some people are worthy and others are not, even when we're aware of it, because we so often believe we are unworthy ourselves. It's hard to be inclusive when we're struggling to feel worthy of inclusion ourselves. So our next reading is the possibility, is about the possibility of living the practice of inclusion in ways that honor and don't, in ways that honor our own limitations and our imperfect selves.
Our second wisdom reading comes from our own tradition. Elizabeth Nguyen is a community minister and migrant justice officer with Community Justice Exchange. She has helped to start multiple communities of justice and spirit, and she is a member at First Parish in Malden, Massachusetts. I got off work at 7 p.m. and did the thing where you chase the bus a little bit, but then you realize that you won't make it and walk sheepishly back to the bus stop. I'm already an hour late to Sunday night singing at the Lucy Stone Cooperative, a UU affordable housing co-op in Boston. I'm still ambivalent. I could go home to Netflix and grilled cheese. I could choose predictability and warm carbs. Or I could get on the bus to this community where I was first a member of the planning team and now a board member. This place where, despite my leadership role, I still find myself questioning whether and how I belong. I give myself a little pep talk, reminding myself that I'm allowed to show up late and hungry and in need of a song. Reminding myself that being in community means offering care and being cared for. Bringing my shiny self and my not-so-shiny self. When I arrive, there's a teapot of hot water and a plate of fat beets on the table. A friend presses a bowl into my hands, and there's broccoli soup. We sing Amazing Grace. The wonders of accepting love had made me whole and real. Community is covenant. It's the promise of a bowl of soup and a song at the end of a day. It's love in the form of a house on Moreland Street that has said it doesn't matter that I don't live there, that I too am welcome on Sunday nights. Laid bare, it is the succor and accountability of doing that thing together that we cannot do alone. I've not always been my best self in the communities I've loved. I've shirked dish duty at Lucy Stone and missed weddings in my hometown. I've dropped out when I was needed and showed up full of pettiness and exhaustion. The wonder of accepting love is only made evident when we're allowed to shed the shiny and let the sourness show. Our communities of spirit are only real because we show up late expecting to be fed, because we both give and get, because we bring our tart and our sweet, our gifts and our struggles. We need lemon in the lentils, rice vinegar in the sushi, a squeeze of lime in the enchilada, and some acid in our communities. Without it, our communities are superficial. with no acid, we are one note and monotone. Our vulnerabilities, our bits of brokenness, bring life to our relationships. We are part of community when we show up shiny and not so shiny. When we ladle soup into each other's bowls and eat it eagerly. When we bring our sour and our sweet. When we shed the shiny and show up hungry.
So I used the term best self earlier when I was talking about how I couldn't interact wholeheartedly during that painful puberty stage of my life. We talk a lot about being our best selves, and I love how Reverend Elizabeth offers us reassurance that we don't always have to be what we think of as our best selves. What's more important, I think, is striving to become more like our whole selves, accepting that we're not perfect, that we are going to mess up, and that messing up might even cause harm, that we can acknowledge harm we've caused and apologize and do better the next time, that this moves us toward not being better, but being more whole, more human. This work pushes back against the idea that some of us are better than others because it teaches us that we are all good. We are all worthy. And I can't talk about this without acknowledging a tension that can show up in some of us who hold some social power. Those of us who are white, male, heterosexual, cisgender, physically able-bodied, with financial means. For those of us, there's this tension sometimes between bringing our whole selves and impacting those of us who are not one or more of those things in some harmful way. I've had people describe this as, it's hard to be a white guy these days. Feel free to substitute any identities of your own that have historically held some power or privilege. And that is true. Because white guys and others who have had power are not used to being asked to do the work of making room for those of us with less power. We're not used to practicing inclusion because, whether consciously or unconsciously, we are not used to believing that we're all worthy, ourselves and those around us. This is why faith traditions like ours are dangerous to the status quo, and why I'm so glad that people come to this congregation. If we all believed in the inherent worthiness and dignity of all people, including our own selves, if we all understood that diversity is strength and not cause for fear, if we all remembered and honored our interdependence, if we all knew that all of us need all of us to survive, we might be a lot less likely to fall into the fear that drives the divide and conquer trap. We might create coalitions across difference that might finally end hatred and oppression. We might come to see the unintended harm as something we all do and something we can all repair. We might liberate all of us from the bondage of creating and sustaining otherness. We might create space for all of us to who we are, to be who we are, openly, freely, and to thrive, to live in ways that honor the full richness of each of us. It is not only okay to show up hungry, it is absolutely necessary, because we are all hungry in some way or another. The truth is that we're always hungry for something, because while we have enough collectively, I say that every Sunday, many of us don't have enough individually or don't know we have enough. That makes us more likely to believe the lies, which are aimed toward keeping us feeling like we don't have enough. The lie that we can feel better, be better by buying more keeps us hungry. The lie that some of us are better than others keeps us hungry. The lie that our strength lies in our individualism keeps us hungry. If we let those lies keep us from showing up, we have lost. And when we do show up hungry, sometimes we receive. And sometimes we learn to know that others are showing up hungry too, and how to make the space that might feed them, and thereby feed ourselves. Cole Arthur Riley, who I quoted before, also wrote, "It is okay to distance yourself from spaces that demand a version of you that is no longer true. Belonging shouldn't depend on illusion." I think this is the work for these times, learning that our hunger is part of our human nature, and that it does not have to consume us, even when it's manipulated. Learning that we have enough and that we are enough. Learning to be whole, to be guests of honor in our own skin, so that we can know ourselves and each other as completely and unquestionably worthy. Close our time of reflection, I invite you to join with me in a shared reading. The litany of response has been created by the Reverend Dawn Cooley. Your response is up on the screens. We let go of who we ought to be and embrace who we are. Let's say that together. We let go of who we ought to be and embrace who we are. Because there have been times when shame has crushed our ability to be wholehearted.
We let go of who we ought to be and embrace who we are.